it seems that we have dodged a bullet. The Senate has passed the continuing resolution that passed the House yesterday, passed just about an hour and a half ago, by a final vote total of 91-9, and we have full details at federalnewsradio.com posted right now. It's our top story under the headline, Senate Passes Stopgap Spending Bill. Senate passed a short-term spending measure today, which will fund the government until March 18th. The House passed the bill yesterday. It now goes to the president for his signature and will avert a government shutdown for now. And those two words, for now, are the two words that I'm interested in exploring with my first guest on the program today, former Deputy Director for Management at OMB, John Koskinen. John, it's great to talk to you again. Thanks for coming on the show.
Delighted to be here, Francis.
The words for now mean that the possibility of a shutdown still lingers and the deadline simply moved from Friday to March 18th, as I mentioned. Since we don't know for sure, as a veteran that you are of the 95-96 shutdown, working with agencies to make sure that the shutdown went as smoothly as possible, what should agencies be thinking about now since they do have a couple of extra weeks to at least potentially prepare?
Well, I think first it's I think terrific that everybody's making a good faith effort to avoid a shutdown. I don't think anybody thinks it's a good way to operate the government or to establish or prove a point. But as you know, the agencies now have a little more time to make sure that they've updated their 94-95 plans to make sure that they are able to execute them effectively. I mean, the challenge, of course, is to make a rational, objective determination about who's performing an emergency function and who's not.
At what point in the 95-96 process that you were at OMB for, was it obvious that something was going to happen? What was the timeline? How much warning did agencies have, and so on?
Well, as we started to think about this in the summer of 95, part of the challenge was the government had never been seriously shut down before. There had been a couple nominal shutdowns in the Reagan administration over a weekend, but you know, nobody had not shown up for work. So while we had hopes then as well that there wouldn't be a shutdown, in the late summer, we asked the agencies to see if they had any plans for a shutdown, and if they didn't, to develop them. And those were reviewed during the fall at OMB, and what we did was try to make, again, sure that there were consistent decisions and analysis being done across the agency. So in that case, it was more complicated than today because nobody had a plan to update in most cases. And on the other hand, there was more time because we really started reviewing those plans in September and October and were prepared, I think, when in around Thanksgiving, the government basically ran out of money and shut down.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the best practices or maybe worst practices that you remember from that time? What agencies prepared themselves, maybe not naming specific agencies, but the agencies that were well prepared, what did they do? And the agencies that found themselves in a bad situation, what did they not do, or what did they do poorly to get themselves into that situation?
Well, I think everyone worked actually pretty well. I mean, it is the Constitution makes it clear you can't spend money that hasn't been appropriated, and it's a violation of the criminal law to actually do so. So I think everybody was focused on trying to make sure that they wouldn't be subject to questions after the fact. And so the harder question was just across agency lines making sure that similar functions were analyzed appropriately so that you didn't have one agency operating a program and another agency with a similar program shutting it down.
The situation as we stand now, I mentioned we have 2 weeks now to go. If you're at an agency, there seem to be three schools of thought from the conversations that I've been having with people. One school of thought is, oh, they'll fix this, and this is never going to happen, and we don't really need to worry about it that much. The other on the other end of the spectrum seems to be, this is absolutely a calamity, and of course it's going to happen. It's the glass not only half empty, but all the way empty, and this is going to be the worst thing ever. And then there's kind of the folks in the middle who are thinking, well, whether it happens or not, I don't have any control over it, and I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. Is there somewhere on that spectrum that you think managers should be kind of locating themselves as far as how they're approaching this possibility?
Well, as I say, I think over the last couple of weeks it's been good news that both parties have been working and thus far successfully to avoid a shutdown. So I think the operating assumption would be that with any luck at all, we won't have a shutdown. But on the other hand, you really need to be prepared for it and not have to scurry around at the last minute. But if you have a plan, you've updated the 95 plan, and you're comfortable with it, and it's been reviewed by, as appropriate, by OMB, I think what you do is you run the business as normal and operate on the assumption the government won't shut down. In other words, I think it's obviously a tense time for managers and employees because it is a little chaotic to have to then suddenly start pulling the plug. But I think our advice in 95 was assume there won't be a shutdown, but just be prepared if there is one.
One of the things I want to talk about when we come back from the break, John, is the idea of keeping people focused on the work that's at hand when this is possibly happening. Some agencies are talking about issues with morale and concentration and so on. People that they work with and that they lead are kind of struggling with concentration and so on. So we'll do that when we come back from the break. John Koskinen is my guest, former deputy director for management at the Office of Management and Budget, and in place there during the 1995-96 shutdown. My guest on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Are you ready to take your organization to the next level? Are you eager to learn what makes world-class organizations so successful? Then plan on attending the Quest for Excellence Conference, April 4th through 6th at the Marriott Wardman Park Hotel in Washington. Hear the senior leaders of award-winning organizations, participate in best practices sessions, and walk away with proven ways to better your organization. Visit go.usa.gov/GY8 or search online for Quest for Excellence 2011 for more information.
Do you know someone who has done something outstanding in the field of human capital management? Nominate them for Federal News Radio's second annual Causey Awards. Together, we'll call attention to what may be a best practice in government. Anyone can be nominated, career, political, and contractors working in the HR field. The award is named after Mike Causey and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the Causey Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search award. Meeting Mission Goals Through Technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture has rolled out another online mapping tool. The website looks and functions a lot like the Food Environment Atlas that USDA launched a year ago, but this version aims to bring together data on several facets of the nation's rural communities so policymakers can make smarter decisions about where to direct federal resources. The department uses county-level data from the Census Bureau, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the Bureau of Economic Analysis, as well as its own data. The census numbers are drawn from the first round of numbers coming from the American Community Survey. Users can click on a county and see information on demographics, jobs, agricultural data, and other economic indicators. In addition to seeing that data, users can download it in spreadsheet form and use it in other applications.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
On Tuesday, the prestigious $500,000 Draper Prize, engineering's highest honor, will be awarded for invention of a process called directed evolution. Through evolution, nature has created biochemicals exquisitely designed for their roles in life processes.
I wanted to build new versions of these things that wouldn't do natural jobs, but instead would help me solve human problems.
Francis Arnold of Caltech is an inventor of directed evolution.
You can optimize biological systems for all sorts of human applications, from baking to laundry detergents to drugs and drug delivery.
She tweaks the genetic blueprints of natural proteins and sees if the change creates a desired function.
I'll collect the ones I like and I'll throw the other ones away.
The process is then repeated in a fine-tuning similar to breeding, but with molecules instead of animals. To find out more, go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What's the buzz in the federal community? Chris Dorbeck knows it. Join Chris for the Dorbeck Insider, weekday afternoons 3 to 7 on Federal News Radio AM. Chris has the insights on who's coming and who's going, new memos, new contracts, fun and helpful ways for federal managers to improve agency productivity while meeting mission goals. The Dorbeck Insider, building federal community by connecting people. Weekday afternoons on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If your glass is half full, there are still over 2 weeks until you have to worry about a shutdown at your agency. If the glass is half empty, there are less than 3 weeks until the shutdown could hit your agency. It's all how you look at it. My guest to talk about this issue is John Koskinen, former Deputy Director for Management at the Office of Management and Budget, and he was there during the 1995-96 shutdown. Attitude's a lot of how you approach these kinds of things, isn't it, John?
Well, it always is. I think, as they say, life is short, so you might as well enjoy it, and I think if you have the glass half full view of life, you'll get through it better. There are clearly possibilities that we'll have a shutdown. There are very complicated, difficult questions the Congress and the administration are dealing with, so I don't think you can dismiss the possibility out of hand. But on the other hand, it'll happen when it happens, and as I say, if you're prepared, you always feel much better about it, and it allows you to focus on the work at hand.
Speaking of focusing on the work at hand, that's one of the things that we're starting to hear, anecdotally at least, is that there are some small morale issues and concentration issues as people wonder exactly what's going to happen. Hopefully some of those will be ameliorated by the fact that there is going to be a period of time now. It's not looming on us in just a couple of days. But what do you recommend to managers who have folks who are asking a lot of questions and who are uncomfortable and uneasy and not sure what's going to happen?
Well, I think one thing you can do is, A, remind them they're all involved in important issues and work. The mission of the agencies they're involved with, you know, all and the programs all play an important role in the economy and in the welfare of citizens. So I think it's helpful for everybody to remember that it is important work that they're doing. Secondly, I think managers can remind people we got through two very complicated shutdowns the last time around. The government shut down for over 20 days. And, you know, everybody got through it. It was not the most pleasant experience in the world, but, you know, the government went on, and I think everybody got back into their appropriate positions, and we managed through 96, I think, very well. So my sense is that, A, the mission's important, and B, whatever happens, we'll get through it just the way we got through it the last time.
That's a really good point, because I guess some of my colleagues in the media and I are guilty of stirring the pot a little bit. And I'm reading here that the 1995-96 shutdown ran from November 14th through the 19th, 1995, and December 16th of 95 through January 6th of 1996. And yet, as you say, 1996 rolled around, the government reopened, and how long did it take till operations and agencies got back to normal? What were the residual effects? Were there negative impacts on the way the agencies did their businesses? What happened next, I guess, is where I'm going.
Well, certainly by the end of the second shutdown, which had run, as you noted, through the holidays, it was easy to get the word out because it was the lead story on every news program. So you didn't have a problem of advising people to come back to work. Everybody knew that Saturday when we solved the problems and came to closure on the issue that they should come back to work. The agencies got started back up very quickly and efficiently. I think that turned out not to be as big a problem as people might have thought when originally you looked at it. I think people had good plans. They had shut down carefully, and I think when they came back, they were all able to be up and running fairly quickly. And I think one of the things that came out of that shutdown, or the two shutdowns, was that a lot of people, certainly new people in the Congress, but a lot of people around the country had kind of lost sight of the wide range of important and desirable and critical activities the government engages in. I think in those days people thought the government was basically welfare and the AID program. And they suddenly got reminded the hard way that there are SBA loans given to thousands of businesses. People get FHA loans. There are food stamp programs. There are a lot of programs that people rely on. There's a lot of information that people need from the government and expect to be able to get quickly. There are parks and museums and other attractions that are run by the government that people enjoy. So I think on the bottom analysis, I think it was actually helpful for federal employees because a lot of people said, gee, the government really does a lot of critical things and important things that I certainly wouldn't want to have go away. And so I think, again, even now, as people look at it, there's a concern about, well, will this program stop? Will that program stop? And some people say, but those are important programs to me. And even though they may not be emergency programs that qualify for funding without an appropriation, they are essential and important and critical. And I think for federal employees, it's a positive outcome when people get reminded about those programs.
What was the process by which the essential or non-essential or exempt or non-exempt employees, the job descriptions were chosen? Because as we've been looking over the lists and thinking about some of the different possibilities and talking about them with experts, there are some that are very obviously essential. There are some that you can say, well, I can't imagine that being classified as essential. But there's a tremendous amount of people who do jobs in government who fall, I think, into that gray area where you could make a case both ways depending how you look at things.
Well, it's not a question of whether you're essential or important or doing work that people want to have continue. The assumption is that everything is shut down. And to overcome that presumption, you have to establish that the individuals in the programs are emergencies for the country. And so there are a lot of very important and essential programs that would not create an emergency if they were not run for a few days or even a couple weeks. They might create an emergency over a longer period of time. But the snow day definition of who's an essential employee is not the standard. The presumption is everything shuts down. And to overcome that presumption, you have to establish that it is an emergency for that person and that program to continue.
That's an interesting and important distinction, because I think a lot of people that have been looking at this have been using that snow day analogy. And so it's important, I think, to emphasize that that's not the case.
Right. And remember, the snow day determination there, the presumption in that gray area is much more, well, it's important to keep the program operating for convenience for services. But that's a different standard than whether it's an emergency for the program to operate. So a lot of people who would show up in the middle of a blizzard will not show up in the middle of a shutdown.
What are the parallels that you see other than the fact that the appropriations bills aren't done? What are other parallels do you see now compared to 1995-96?
Well, you know, the parallels are in 94 you elected, and in 95, 55 new freshman Republicans came up. The Republicans took control of both the House and the Senate, and there was a big push toward controlling government expenditures, and the Contract with America had a balanced budget as a goal. And now you have, instead of 55, you got 88 new freshman congressmen who have come with a thrust from the public about trying to control expenses. The difference is, of course, we have a huge deficit now. Then we were trying to deal with a $200 to $300 billion deficit, which seemed tough at the time, but it doesn't compare to having a $1.5 trillion deficit. The difference also, though, is that then we weren't fighting, one or two wars, and the economy was in better shape, so that the determinations then won't automatically apply to this shutdown. And that's why it's going to take judgment on the part of the people coordinating this in OMB and basically the agencies and their managers to start with the presumption that the 95 plan was appropriate at the time and then update it in light of the changed circumstances.
John, it is always great to get insight from experienced people when it comes to these things, and so I'm grateful for your time today to talk about what you did then and how it applies to what's going on today. I appreciate your time, and I hope we can catch up again as this plays out. We can get a sense of what agencies should think about moving forward.